Podzilla 1985 Sports, or your Podzilla 1985 network, coming in hot to start this April 14th, 2016 show. Cody Sandusky here along with you for the ride. Next 45 minutes or so alongside our good friend Tanner Calvert. Tanner, we've had a week off, and in that week off, a lot of things have happened. So we've got plenty of catching up to do in what's probably going to be a rapid-fire episode.
Yeah, this has been a fun week for sports, especially the last couple of days.
No doubt.
Baseball's in full swing now. You've got a retiring of one of the greatest of all times in basketball. You've got a record that you thought was unbreakable being broken. It's just been so much fun.
Yeah, I put it on Facebook last night, which was, it's reasons like this I love sports. We had the single most historic night in NBA history.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any way to argue that.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Just locally, you had a Blues win for game one of the series against the Blackhawks. Today, you had some redemption with a big 12-strikeout, one-hit performance by Jaime Garcia for the Cardinals. I know you're stoked about that.
I called that at the beginning of the season.
You did.
He's a stud when he's on.
I mean, it's just how long can he stay on?
That's the question. That's always the question for anybody, all admittedly. Right. Him more so than others.
Yeah, I was about to say, Trevor Short, we don't know. He's been a surprise. Jaime Garcia, we normally know when his arm goes out. So.
Yeah. I didn't actually watch the game. I had to listen to it on the radio, which is my preferred way to enjoy the games.
Yep.
Mike Shannon on the mic. I love it. And just his excitement on that 12th strikeout to end the game was got me excited as if I was there.
Yeah, Mike, I was listening driving back and forth from the doctor's office. I think it was strikeout number 8 or number 9. He was already starting to get pretty punch happy with that strike 3. He was getting stoked for it. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He screamed that cutter for strike 3 on 12. It was awesome. That was one of the best regular season calls I've ever been able to listen to.
That's the beauty of it. Sports are in full swing for multiple of them. Baseball's going. Hockey's got playoffs. Basketball. Regular season's finally over. We did have, we'll discuss a little bit again, Villanova winning the championship. A huge last-second shot.
Oh,
looks so beautiful to see that happen. So lots of highs going on. We do have a low to discuss as well, but we will go into that as we continue the show. But right now, we're going to ride the energy train. We've had too many down shows. The sports podcast has been on the realistic, sad side of sports.
Yeah.
We're not that. We are the happy side of sports. That's what we're going to go with. So,
and I'd like to say that Villanova winning, it's like redemption for me for the MMA, for the UFC predictions we made.
Yeah.
I remember messaging you, Cody, this is happening.
This is real life. Just to recap before we even go into the NBA stuff. So I don't know if I think I told you this that night. I was driving from my girlfriend's house. I was driving from Emily's house going home.
Yeah.
And I was listening to it on the local radio station, sports station for it. I am crossing through Jackson. The last shot goes up. I know that there's a last shot taken. Radio hits a patch of static
as it goes in.
So all I hear coming out of the static is, the shot's good. Was it in time? And that's all I know. And I was messaging you about it saying, hey, was it in time? And you hit me. You're like, it was 0.5 seconds left. There's ample time. He's good.
Yeah.
And I got home in time. I threw on the TV, was able to watch the playback. And oh, my goodness.
And it was one of those things. When it left his hand, I knew it.
Yeah.
I was sitting there watching the game with Brandy, and she told me this. She's like, as soon as the ball left his hand, you were standing up cheering. I'm like, I guess I didn't even realize it. I was so happy.
I had a blackout, brownout.
Yeah, complete brownout. Blew out that time.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you see Jay Wright, the coach of him, did the same thing.
Yeah,
he just kind of looked up and walked.
Yeah, he just kind of stood up, was smiling. He's like, is this happening? And I feel so bad because my coworker is a huge North Carolina fan.
Yeah.
And from day one of the tournament, he's been saying, this is North Carolina's tournament. It's their championship. They might as well go ahead and hand us the trophy. And I told him Friday when I left work, if they lose, I will not talk trash when I come in. I promise. Because I told him, Nova can beat them.
Yeah.
Tuesday morning, I walk in. And, I sit down. I was like, morning. Just regular conversation, and finally, like, after 30 seconds of silence, he just says, yeah, we should have won that game. I'm like, dude, I told you I wasn't going to talk about it. I'm not going to do that to you.
Yeah.
Other people around the office? Not so much.
But for North Carolina, I mean, you give them everything. They were down 10-plus to Villanova with 8 minutes left.
Oh, yeah. I take nothing away from that team.
They bring that game up to a Marcus Page circus shot. That's really what it was, a double-pump three-pointer to tie the game with 4.4 left on the clock.
That was a Michael Jordan shot if I've ever seen one.
Yeah.
From a North Carolina Tar Heel.
Yeah, Page had his moment. That was going to be the one shining moment thing to take that game to overtime.
Yeah.
And then Chris Jenkins decided to make it a tournament of his own.
I tell you what, for me, the best part, because I'm not really a Villanova fan. I rooted for them because they were the underdog. They're a team that no one expected to win. Mm-hmm. My favorite thing to come from this tournament is all the crying Michael Jordan memes.
Oh, my God.
They're so amazing.
I saw that immediately on Twitter. Just went off like a rocket. People were ready for it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think people were ready for it when Villanova was up 10 or 12. They were prepping.
Yeah.
And then it just paid off that their Photoshop worked just in time.
Yeah, because it seemed like instantly after the shot was made, just those memes started popping up everywhere. And just so funny.
So many people I follow on Twitter, sports, you know, sports commentators and everything, are like, this has gone full circle. We have hit the meme full circle. I think by that night alone, it went three or four times circled around.
Yeah.
Like that crying Jordan meme was applied in every situation I'm at. I saw it last night.
Oh, yeah.
The Warriors breaking the 73rd game, and it was the very famous picture of Jordan with his head down and Pippen right beside him.
Yeah.
It was crying Jordan and Steph Curry holding him up.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is still a thing. And I don't know. That's the beauty of the internet. You catch one thing that's really funny, and people will bury it.
It's been a bad year for teams that Jordan has been associated with.
Yeah. Well, you know, he did Chicago. I mean, he made Chicago. Yeah. He made North Carolina, helped make North Carolina. The White Sox have a chance? Question mark.
That's the funniest thing you said all day.
And you know what? I try to save my humor right here for Podzilla 1985 Sports.
I actually got to watch a video of his short stint with the pro club, like with the White Sox at I guess it was still Kaminsky then.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny. And he wasn't a bad baseball player by any means. He wasn't a major leaguer, but
no. The Hornets didn't look good either. So something's got to break for him some point. Or if maybe my favorite meme, by the way, as we transition into this NBA discussion, my favorite meme so far of all of this were the limited 72 and 10 edition Jordans.
Oh.
Do you see that picture?
No.
It's a price on eBay, $349, 72 and 10 limited Jordan 12s or whatever, marked down to $34.99 is the crying Jordan face in the corner.
Oh, no.
Shoe value dropping.
Oh, wow.
90% in a day. No, it's in case you've missed it, and mind you, we're recording this on Thursday. Due to different things we'll get into, they'll be posted on Saturday morning. So this will be the 16th by the time you're hearing this. In case you've missed it, one, I'm sorry. Two, where have you been? Three, thank you for joining us. Four, history happened last night.
A lot.
April 12th, 2016 is going to go down as the single most historic night in NBA history. And I don't think that's any form of embellishment just based upon what happened. You had the Warriors defeating the Memphis Grizzlies to pick up their 73rd win of the season to take the single season greatest record in NBA history.
And are on their way to winning a second consecutive championship.
That's the part I'm concerned about, and that was the part that I was going to kind of caveat all of that with. But yes, things are looking good right now for them to make that run.
Yeah.
And this is a team, and just on top of that, Steph Curry, 400 made three-pointers. 402 when the season was over. Mind you, he has the largest number of three-pointers attempted in a single season ever by 200-some-odd shots. 866, I think, is the number. Which Bill Simmons, of course, Celtics fan, The Ringer website, formerly of ESPN and all that, had a post on that when people were ripping Kobe about taking 50 shots in his 60-point performance, which we'll talk about in a minute. Steph Curry made 48%. Maybe not. Maybe 43% of his three-pointers all season.
And that's a pretty decent percentage from the three-point line.
Yeah, he is the first player all time, and there's a caveat to go with this as well. First player all time to join the 50-40-90 club with 30 points per game in a season. And 50-40-90, for those of you who don't know, is 50% shooting from the field, 40% shooting from three-point range, and 90% free throw shooting. So it's generally considered if you had a great season as a shooter, you have the 50-40-90 benchmark. The caveat with that is that Larry Bird, I think it was 87 or 88, hit the 50-40-90 club with a 29.9 point per game average.
Yeah.
So technically someone's already reached that echelon, but the fact that it's been almost 30 years since it's happened, and it's coming at such an outrageous clip. A guy made 400 three-pointers. No one's made 300 before in a season. He broke the record last year with, what, 289?
I have not.
Somewhere in the high 200s.
Yeah.
No one had ever made 300, and he eclipsed it to 400. We are seeing records set that, you know, Jordan made the comment last night. Records are made, you know, it's not a new thing, but records are made to be broken. He acknowledged that we played, we did our thing, records are made to be broken, and it happened. Congratulations to them. They're setting records that may not be broken.
Except by themselves.
And that's about the only thing currently. And that's the interesting thing with Steph Curry. This team as a whole, it's encapsulated, and I'm not breaking new ground by saying this. It's encapsulating what is now the NBA and what now basketball has turned into. And that's not a bad thing. It's just the development of the sport. They have their big men. They have their Draymond Greens. They have their Festus Ezeles. They have traditional, quote-unquote, big men and Anderson Varejão and Andrew Bogut. They have the bigs in the middle. They don't play that way. Draymond Green plays the five for them the majority of the time.
Yeah.
And he is, you know, a small forward, power forward five. He's not your post center. They set screens for Curry and Klay to get open. Klay and Curry set screens for Draymond to go into the post and just bang him and Harrison Barnes both, same with Iguodala. This is a team that, this is new basketball. This really is what it is. And people I know are still ranting and raving. They have been for a couple years now that the three-point game is, it's niche. It's whatever. It's not how you develop a basketball team. Someone's got 73 wins to say that you can.
Yeah. The time of the big man is out, and that hurts me to say.
Yes, because I know you and I are partial to some big men, at least, and even still playing actively, like Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett.
Yeah, and even Tim, it doesn't. He is a true center, but he's not what I consider a big man. I think the time of the big men ended when Shaq retired.
I can see that.
I mean, you're talking about people like Shaq playing, the Admiral, David Robinson,
Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah, those were big men. That was fun basketball for me. I love to watch a big guy in the post blocking shots and dunking it.
Well, that was made for people like you and me.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, again, in case you've never seen us in person, Tanner's 6'5", and I'm 5'11", 6 foot. So obviously the disparity leans more toward Tanner. But being a bigger guy who wasn't fast, that's also the way I envisioned playing basketball.
Yeah.
If there was ever the way I was going to be in the post, boxing out, fighting for rebounds, and just getting, you know, tip-ins, basically.
Yeah.
That's the kind of sport we grew up with. It's a more physical sport. It's not the case anymore, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just the development of the sport.
Yeah, but basketball's changed how many times in its history? Like, you'll have a point in time where
dozens of times
where your guards are the outstanding ones, and you have another point in time where your centers, you know, your big men stand out, and it just changes.
Yeah.
It just seems like one generation comes through and it's a bunch of big guys, and then the next one comes through and it's not.
Yeah,
like right go. I know there are some high scorers out there that are over 6'5", 6'6". I know they're out there. But the biggest majority, especially in the college, in the high schools in this area that are playing, there's no one over 6'4".
No, they're guards.
Yeah, everybody is a guard. At Carroll High School over in Carroll, Illinois, where I work every once in a while, and it's my alma mater, it's where I played basketball at. When I played, I was the smallest big man on the team. I guess you could say I'm 6'5", and the two others over me were 6'7" and 6'8".
Yeah,
and so I quickly had to learn from going from junior high being a center to being a shooting guard, and which was fine because I enjoyed shooting, but to now where their big man is 6'1", 6'2", and he's running the ball mostly, and shooting, and I. Times change. It happens. And 10 years from now, we may end up having all the high schools around here got somebody over 6'5". It may happen. It may not.
Yeah. And the thing about it is even the bigger players, because we're seeing some of these coming through college and now starting to make their way to the pros, like your Ben Simmons, mm-hmm. like your Jason Tatum's going to Duke for probably 1 year, the 6'9 Gatorade National Player of the Year from St. Yeah. Louis. They're not 6'9 in the sense of being, you know, box out, bang in the paint all the time, guys.
They move quick.
Exactly. These are players that play like guards. I mean, you look at LeBron James. LeBron James as an athlete doesn't exist 25 years ago.
No.
You don't have a guy coming in that is capable, you know, all jokes aside, capable of playing tight end in the NFL, or at least in a high level of competition with his frame. The dude's what, 6'7", 6'8"?
Yeah.
Like 240.
He was a center he was a power forward in high school.
Yeah. And played like a guard.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about the development of the sport, you look at the faces of the sport. These are not the same faces of the sport we saw 20 years ago. This isn't, and I hate to say it because that's no mark against the players who came before. A LeBron James isn't even a Kobe. A Kobe learned over time to play in the post better. He went and studied under Hakeem Olajuwon for a summer. He resorted to that in part because his hops were leaving him. Because the Achilles, because the knees, because problems were plaguing him health-wise, he reformed his game, which is kudos to him, and as I said, we'll discuss him here in a moment, but that's not the same kind of player that a LeBron is or that a Steph Curry is. These players have just, it's a different type of game.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, and everyone's harped on it, ourselves included, why the whole 95-96 Bulls. Now the joke can die, by the way, because now it's going to be, can they beat the 2015-2016 Warriors? To which people are probably still going to say yes. Because, you know, even Jordan and Pippen have talked smack. Pippen said that they would sweep the Warriors, the 95-96 Bulls.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
And we got to that discussion at work the other day, and we were talking about it, and the coworker who's a North Carolina fan hates Golden State. He's a huge Chicago Bulls fan. He hates Golden State with a passion, simply because of the record.
Okay.
And he's always trying to find excuses of why he thinks that Jordan and the rest of the Bulls team would beat the Warriors, and he flat out said, and I think he even tried to say that Jordan said this, and he may have. I don't know. I've not read it or heard it. But if they had hand-checking in the league today, like they did when Jordan played, he wouldn't have been able to get off as nearly as many shots as he's gotten off. Clean shots.
And see, even then, Curry strikes me as someone who could adjust.
Yeah. We've seen him do it. How many times have we seen him go up with somebody's hand in his face and pushing him back with a fadeaway shot, and he's knocked him down?
No. Well, here's the thing. You're going to start hand-checking at 30, 35 feet? The guy's taken enough shots to warrant taking those shots, and he's made them. Like,
I'd be scared of running into that four-point play.
Exactly.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to take that chance. Yeah. Hand-checking inside is a little different.
Yeah.
I'm not hand-checking outside.
Exactly. Even guards then. I mean, yeah, hand-checking was a thing, but don't think it's prevalent enough in the 90s and the 80s to he's going to be limited a little bit. I will argue that. Curry, I think, goes for a 30-point-per-game score, 24-25.
Yeah.
I think he loses a couple buckets a game. That's fine. The guy is still no slouch. The guy is still going to be, you take his raw skill in whatever era it is, at least within the three-point era.
Yeah.
We'll say that, because a lot of his skill is going to be negated because of its high volume of scoring with threes. You put him anywhere in a three-point era, that shot doesn't change. The fluidity of his release doesn't change. His ability to find the bottom of the hole doesn't change, no matter what era you put him in.
Yeah. And I don't know why. It just seemed, was it last year he really took off?
Yeah, and won his MVP last year.
Yeah, and I watched him play I guess it was his senior year at Davidson?
Yeah, I believe it was junior year, I think.
Was that the year of the tournament?
Yeah. Because he doesn't have his degree from Davidson, that's why they won't put him in the Hall of Fame at Davidson yet.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. So I remember watching him play in that tournament, and I'm thinking, this kid is awesome. And they were that Cinderella team that I always like to watch. And I it was one of those things where he kind of disappeared off the radar once he got to the NBA. Had the same thing with J.J. Redick. This kid was unstoppable when he was at Duke. If the ball was in his hands, they were scoring.
Yeah.
And he got to the NBA, went to the Magic first off, and just kind of floundered. And now he's found his stride with the Clippers.
Yeah, he's found his niche.
Yeah.
For sure. And there's nothing wrong with J.J. Redick. For him, it was, and even for Steph Curry, a lot of it was just being saddled with teams that weren't doing well.
Yeah, that's the thing. So much talent on these teams, especially on those West Coast teams, man.
Oh, my God. I mean, you look at that team, Harrison Barnes, even going back down to Spies. You got Spies, Barnes, Green. You can move any one of those pieces, and you're going to drastically change the face of the Warriors.
Yeah.
But you're going to drastically improve whatever team you're putting them on as long as they have a spot-up shooter.
Yeah. And that's the problem. A lot of these teams try to pick up a single player and thinking they're going to improve their stock that well.
Yeah.
I hate to tell them, man, like, one player is not going to make a difference for you.
No. It never has.
Yeah. And if you bring that player in and they don't mesh well with everybody else, you're not going to have success. Look at the Cavaliers. You bring in Kevin Love, you bring LeBron James back, you bring in
Well, Kyrie Irving was there, and they beat him. Yeah.
Yeah. And that team just, like, they've played well, but they just haven't meshed.
Yeah. They're a little bit better this year going to the playoffs, but I credit that more to just LeBron saying, this is me, back off and let me do it.
Yeah.
No, you're right. You look at teams that have relied on a single-player approach, and you see teams like LeBron's first trip to the finals in 08, 09, when he went with the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
You take a look at Iverson in 2000. They're teams that, yes, they make a drastic difference, but it's not enough to win it.
No.
Never has been. And, you know, the argument's come up plenty of times in the last number of years. Those 90s Bulls franchises had so many players. It's not wrong. These Warriors have so many players, even role players like Leandro Barbosa.
Yeah.
And Andre Iguodala, a guy who was a star for Philadelphia, came in, won the finals MVP as a bench player last year, more or less. He started in a lot of the finals because of injuries. But, yeah, it's not a one- or two-piece system. You have to have a fully fleshed-out team with role players, with people who are capable of coming in.
Yeah. And that's the problem you're seeing with the Bulls today. That team's just not meshing, and it hurts my heart.
If we had the visual gag for the audio podcast.
Yeah.
Why? I was done.
I'm sorry.
I can't cry anymore, Tanner. I'm finished.
I know. Oh, man. And it what makes me sad is apparently the players on the team outside of Butler himself are feeling hostility towards Butler. They're thinking the team caters to him too much and ignores them. And this is there's disaster brewing in Chicago. And Butler's great.
I can't do it. I can't talk about it. It hurts too much.
Yeah, I know. I'm right there with you. I just wanted to get that off my chest.
I know.
The fact that they're worried about them catering to Butler too much.
I know.
And then Derrick Rose.
I miss Tom Thibodeau.
Yes.
Kobe. Kobe scored 60 points in his final game. 60
points.
Yeah, no, 6-0. In another case of, if you missed it, it's been 3 days. Where have you been? Thank you for listening. Go look it up. 38 points in the second half. Didn't sit at all in the second half. This is a guy who has come out of games 10 minutes in and looked like a freaking Ace Bandage sponsor wrapped up in ice bags and manila-colored wrap. He shows up last night and just goes.
He's been saving that all season.
He has been. You know he has been. And I had a friend who posted on Facebook, because we were all, you know, of course, Facebook and social media blowing up about it. He made the comment, I think it spoke best. This is sheer willpower. It is out-of-body experience for him to finish his career and to do it on such a high note. And I get people have complained. He shot 50, he took 50 field goal attempts. His three-point shooting was abysmal, even though it was a deep two that helped him take the game for a win.
Yeah.
Led his team to a win, by the way. I get that he had a high volume of shots, and then it was the Jazz. But the Jazz were just eliminated from playoff contention by the Houston Rockets winning. So the Jazz were a potential playoff team.
Yeah.
The Lakers are not, of course. They're in turmoil right now. He didn't pass a lot. He had 4 assists, 4 rebounds, and 60 points. That's okay. I love the joke he made of it in the press conference at the end. Or they had a big thing with him on the court at the end of the game. He made a comment. He's like, you know, everyone's been telling me so many years to pass the ball, and everyone tonight's like, nope, don't pass the ball. And he did it. He took over, and it was a nice, a nice way to see a player who was in multiple cases so capable of taking over a game do it. Yeah, maybe in a bastardization of it. I get it. It was a different, you know, whatever that may be. To see it happen one more time was really magical to see. And honestly, I watched more of the Lakers game than I did the Warriors game.
Yeah, and that's why it's unfortunate for Kobe. He kind of got overshadowed by the Warriors game by a lot of people, which, like I said, is unfortunate. But I was watching, I'm thinking, he's just getting so tired. You can see in the fourth quarter, when he made that last three or four shots, he could barely pick his feet up.
Yeah.
He's running, but his feet he's not moving the way he normally does.
Right.
You can see
at least the way we used to see him for the last 20 years.
Yeah. Even watching him like in the first quarter compared to that last, he was not moving.
No.
I don't know how he was doing it. Just, like you said, sheer willpower. I don't know.
Had to be. I'm curious, and it's not something you can ever test or ever kind of fathom, but I'm curious what is going through his mind or through his body at that point.
Yeah.
The fact that even he hit 40 points. Like, people were wondering if he was going to be able to play 30 minutes last night. And he played a stupid amount, a bit more than that. He sat out for half the second quarter. I think that was it. He didn't sit at all in the second half outside of timeouts and things like that. 60 points, 38 of them. And I can't express it in words. Go look up footage because you just see they're just glimpses. Not again of the Kobe we saw before the Achilles injury. This isn't the Kobe coming straight out of high school. This isn't the three-peat Kobe. This is a player that knows his time is done, but knows that his body has just enough to let him have some glory one more time. And it was really awesome to see. And it was fun. I'm trying to remember who interviewed him after the game. It wasn't Lisa Saunders. I'm trying to think of who it was. But it was one of the sideline reporters from ESPN. She asked if, you know, he's like, are you sure you're going to retire? You know, you look pretty good out there. He's like, nope, I'm done. He's like, I'm glad my body feels it. I'm done. And it was, I'm really happy. And it's very odd to say, because Kobe Bryant is a very divisive character because of his ego, because of his drive, because of problems, including the Colorado case. Yeah. You can't fully erase that from memory, good, bad, or indifferent. But to see a player that was so enraptured, so driven by winning and being great, to see him have that one final moment and be able to leave saying that he was that, was really awesome to witness in my lifetime, because this isn't a Kobe that's coming back. We're not going to see a Jordan situation where he goes to his equivalent of the Wizards. He's done. He's over with. I didn't get to see the Jordan retirement the first time. I think I caught the end of it the second time. Or, well, excuse me, the third time.
Yeah.
Only saw in flashbacks the first and second time.
Yeah, I remember them all pretty vividly.
Yeah, yeah. And Kobe is really the best one to have this moment with his team, because players who have spent a long time with their teams didn't finish. Allen Iverson didn't finish with his team. Shaq sure as heck didn't finish with Orlando.
Oh, Jesus.
Paul Pierce isn't finishing with Boston. He might come back for a brief moment, but it's not the same situation.
Yeah.
None of these players, you know, Steve Nash, Jason Kidd, none of them. Dirk Nowitzki's going to be the next one. Dirk and the Spurs players. And it's going to be really interesting because we've talked about it, kind of the era's changing, the different players. This is a game that is changing. Those are the last few players we're going to see that I think we're going to have this moment. And outside of Tim Duncan, I don't think it's going to be the same kind of moment as it was with Kobe. Because Kobe is the face, or was, and still is a part of, a face of the sport. And while Tim Duncan, I know for you and I, is a face of the sport.
Yeah,
Dirk Nowitzki for the international market, at least in Europe, is a face of the sport. Kobe is known worldwide and has been for a very long time. And to see that kind of figure retire on the same team 20 years later, it's... I used magical. It really was. To be able to watch it, it felt really cool to see. I wasn't moved to tears. I got close, but I didn't cry doing it. But just to watch it happen live.
Yeah.
It was really surreal. I was really glad I got to see it.
Yeah. Almost like that is why I love sports.
You're not kidding.
Watching Kobe score his 60, and people can complain about him taking 50 or 60. It was 50 plus shots.
50 shots.
They can complain about him taking 50 shots. He scored 60 points.
Yeah.
And he hit a majority of what he shot.
At least in 2-point range.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't understand it. It aggravates me. If he's making them, let him.
Well, if it's only for one more time, haters are going to hate.
Especially since it's his last game. Yeah. People just want to find something to gripe about.
Well, like I said, haters are going to hate.
Yeah.
This is how it is. Let's see. Kobe Bryant, stat line for his final game. 42 minutes of a possible 48. 60 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. 2 turnovers.
Oh, the block. Yeah, I forgot about the block.
All 4 rebounds defensively. 22 for 50 from the field. 10 of 12 from the free throw line, including the 2 that gave him the 59th and 60th point. 6 for 21 from 3. Okay, I get. That's the blight. That's the bad one. 6 of 21, I'll do the math here. That's 28.5% shooting from 3. Yeah. Kobe's not always been the best from 3. Jordan didn't really pick up any 3-point shooting until the last 3-peat. Because he had to.
Yeah.
Or at least diversified things. 22 by 50, that's 44% shooting. And we're talking about a guy a little bit earlier, Steph Curry, who's shooting about 46 from 3. I get it. It's a little more impressive. I get it. But you can't do one or the other. You can't pick on who's taking the highest volume of shots. And maybe both of them took a high volume of shots. I get it. Whatever. We have seen greatness happen. We have seen awesome moments happen. Don't dilute it by being anal.
Yeah.
That's Cody's soapbox thing for the week. Don't dilute the magic you're seeing by getting hung up on the... I get the numbers are maybe a little unrealistic. Yeah, it was all focused on Kobe. Or yeah, Steph Curry's taking a lot of shots that, you know, seem ridiculous. In Steph's case, he's made most of them, so he's warranted to do it. Kobe is the face of a sport. Leave it be. Realize what you've seen and be ready to share it with your kids.
Yeah, that's a game you're going to be able to go back and show the highlights of for years.
Oh, don't worry. ESPN will beat us to it.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, the Lakers, I don't think are going to be anything relevant for the next couple of years. So no. Kobe's last 60-point game might be it.
Yeah, it's going to be the most exciting thing that happens for the Lakers for a while.
But I was thinking, there were so many other sports contests going on last night. Like, yeah. I was, the Blues, you know, our local hockey franchise, won a 1-0 overtime game against our rival in game one of a series. I stopped watching halfway through the third period.
Who are you guys going against in game in
Chicago.
In the first round?
Uh-huh. Welcome to the new layout of NHL playoff hockey.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Oh, it's I'm not a fan of it.
Zach, no slap bet.
Yo.
Stay away from me.
Yep. Yeah, just in case, we'll just touch on it briefly because I know we got a few other things we want to hit on. For the NHL, if you win your division, you play a wild card spot. So the Dallas Stars won the division. So they're playing one of the wild card teams. And the same for the Pacific. If you don't, you play the other team in your division. Like how the hockey standings work out for the NHL now, you can have three teams in each division that are guaranteed to make it.
Yeah.
For 1 through 3 and 4 through 6. You know, however that way it lays out. Then you have the two wild card teams from whatever division. Best record gets it. The Blues were number 2. The Blackhawks were number 3 in the Central. We play each other. I don't like it. I get the changes are needed in sports. Like, people have a lot of beefs with the way playoffs work out now. Because there are teams that are below 500 or teams that are going to get swept or blah, 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 blah. I don't care. Beating up on a team that you've already beat up on 5 or 6 times in a season and you could beat up 7 more times before getting to face the next level of competition, it's dumb. I want 1 through 8 back. Give me 1 through 8. You can keep your 3 teams in each division thing. That's fine. Give us 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, 3, 6, 4, 5.
I think the only sport that I wanted to see their playoff bracket, you know, their playoff format changed was college football. I like the way they've gone with the actual.
Well, yeah, because we actually get to have some form of playoff for a champion.
Yeah,
it's not a computer deciding it.
Yeah, they didn't need to change anything with hockey. I don't think I care for that too much at all. Yeah. So who's the Ducks have in the first round?
I can pull up the playoff brackets for you now.
Okay.
I had them saved on my phone and then deleted them because I was clearing out pictures and whatnot. Let's see here.
Everybody knows now.
Yeah, you're a Ducks fan.
I'm a huge Ducks fan.
The Ducks are facing... Well, my phone's not going to cooperate. Here we go. The Ducks are facing Nashville.
Oh, good.
Yeah. See, you're probably fine. Here's the thing. San Jose is facing Los Angeles.
What?
Yep, because they were 2 and 3 in the division. Which for Dallas, it doesn't matter because Dallas is playing Minnesota because they're a Central Division team. The Pacific didn't have any other wild cards teams. The two were Minnesota and Nashville because the Central is so stacked this year. Yeah.
This tournament, this postseason.
It's dumb. It's real dumb. D-U-M.
Very. That's proper spelling there, buddy.
Oh, no, that was...
I know for the story.
Okay. I was about to say, I was like, I promise that was real. You're listening to Podzilla 1985 Sports, the Cody and Tanner are frustrated at hockey layout for playoffs edition, / the rapid fire edition, which I don't think we've done a great job with, but that's whatever. That's what happens when we're friends with those who own the network.
I'm ready for the third round, because third round could possibly be a Ducks-Blues playoff, and I want that so bad.
We might not be allowed to record the podcast there.
Yeah. We got to record it on the way.
You're not wrong.
In the car.
You're not wrong. You're going to get the iPhone 6/Nexus 6P edition, the mobile edition of the podcast. Lots of yelling, maybe a few swears, whatever. It's probably fine. You'll listen to it anyway, we hope.
You're going
to
hear one of us pop off a stat and you're in the sad.
Yep, that's going to be a thing. Anyway, I know one of the things we want to talk about, I want to end on a bad in terms of stupid note. So that's what we'll end with. But I feel like it does need to be addressed at least a little bit via, you know, Shannon Young, the one of the patriarchs of the Podzilla 1985 family. Wanted us to talk
patriarch.
About it. Well, I guess. Yeah, I give him and Jesse equal credit. Jesse had the equipment.
He did.
There you go. Yeah, I like to give him credit. Anyway, because this is something that is warranted discussing. And I always mispronounce his name despite hearing it a dozen times, so I do apologize for the deceased ahead of time. Joao Carvalho. I think it's Joao. J-O-A-O Carvalho is an MMA fighter. He was in a fight in Dublin, Ireland. He's 28 years old. He fought against our Irishman Charlie Ward, who is a teammate in the same training camp as Conor McGregor. He died in a hospital after suffering head injuries in a match. I believe it was Saturday. He complained of feeling unwell after his fight against Charlie Ward. It was stopped by the referee in the third round. Portuguese welterweight who fought for Team Nobrega was taken to a hospital, had emergency brain surgery that night, but died Monday evening after 48 hours in intensive care. It's the organization that ran it, which was Total Extreme Fighting. They confirmed the death, and they say, quote, "We extend our most sincere condolences to the family of Joao Carvalho, and to his teammates in Team Nobrega. Our thoughts and prayers are with them. We'd also like to thank all sports fans for their concern and support." The statement said TEF would, quote, "give whatever support we can to Joao's family," and noted that the fighter had been admired on both a national and international level.
The question now is, what kind of changes come from something that happens like this?
And I don't know. Those are the things that are discussed even further down in the article. Mind you, I'm reading from CNN right now. Bystanders and everyone stressed that all safety regulations were observed. He was immediately helped by the medical team before being transferred to the hospital. They acknowledged that it was a huge tragedy. Conor McGregor has come out and said that he believed the fight could have been stopped a little earlier. So there's at least some people who are saying that it should have happened or it could have happened, but
it's one of those things I can't make a judgment on the fly without actually seeing what happened or
right.
getting a vivid detail, you know, vivid details of what happened.
Right.
If you see the man is not coherent mid-fight and you let it go on, then the ref's at fault there. He should have called it once he could tell that he wasn't all there.
Right. And I know for some that's a really fine line because some fighters are able to portray themselves as being all there, but really not being all there. And that's, you know, it's a very tough line to even just walk trying to assign blame. And I know that's not what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
I hope that's what a lot of people are not trying to do. Even if there was a mistake made, assigning blame is a very slippery slope and a very dangerous thing to do in a situation.
Especially this sport. From what I can tell, no one deserves any blame for this. It's just one of those freak accidents that happen. It's about as a freak accident as the first base coach that got hit in the back of the head with a foul ball and got killed.
Yeah.
It's just a freak accident. It happened. I don't think there's anything that anybody could have done to have changed the outcome. But I can guarantee you there are people out there that are going to come asking for something to make the sport safer. And I don't know how you make MMA more safer.
I don't know either. And this is coming right off the heels of the state of New York finally relenting and allowing mixed martial arts events to happen in their state.
And I'm really hoping this doesn't set that back.
I don't think it will. Governor Cuomo has already signed it into effect, as far as I understand.
Yeah.
And they're already discussing, and that's something we'll discuss as we get closer. They're talking about having it at Madison Square Garden for UFC 205 and Lorenzo Ferretti thing, that there's already going to be a title fight. Ronda Rousey's name's been thrown in the ring. That's a different thing we'll get into as we get closer. But yes, the state of New York did just sign. It was one of, you know, a big state that did initially, but they banned it, I believe, after the first couple Ultimate Fighter. And I'm talking, you know, UFC 1.
2.
Yeah, 1, 2, maybe up to 5, if even then we're in New York. And then after that, it was locked down pretty quickly by the state of New York because it was a much more ruthless, much more freewheeling game. Now there's rule, now there's structures, there's drug testing, things like that. They finally relented. But then you have
a situation
like
this. I'm sure
the
weight classes actually help with this.
That also does, yes.
Yeah, because UFC 1...
Yeah, it was
when you see a little guy, it looks like Rey Mysterio going up against
Tank Abbott.
Yeah. It just said, yeah, it's, the weight class has helped.
Yeah, organizing it like an actual sport has helped a lot in that case. But and I agree with you. I don't want to see the sport necessarily set back because of this, because much like boxing, it's a sport that has been participated in, or at least in variants of it, not necessarily mixed martial arts as a thing, but the different combat sports that make up mixed martial arts, whether it be jiu-jitsu, whether it be taekwondo, things like that, even boxing. They've been participated in for multiple hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, things like this happen. And it's terrible. We don't wish for them to happen. We hope they wouldn't happen. I wish this hadn't happened. Not just because it's going to put a blemish on a sport. That's, you know, that's well beyond that. This is someone's life.
Yeah.
That was ultimately ended by a sport.
Somebody lost a family member.
Exactly. And that's never justifiable. It's never warranted. That's never desired. But unfortunately, and it goes back to kind of discussions that I know we've had off the air in the past with like football and things like that. Those are the risks you know going in.
Yeah.
And I know that's a very fine line to walk. I've argued the other side. I still kind of believe the other side in terms of football. But in mixed martial arts, especially, you know, you're going to a sport where there's no head protection. You've basically got a cup, your gloves, your fingerless gloves. That's it. That's all you've got. And at that point, it's if you can avoid the big hits, if you can avoid the contact, or if you can just avoid the unlucky breaks. And this is unfortunately a case where it seemed like there was an unfortunate break that caused the passing of Joao Carvalho. And as you said, if there are things that need to be changed to make this safer, by all means, bring them on. No sport is beyond repute in terms of being analyzed for its safety, for its competitiveness. That's not the case. This is just an example, just like anything else, where hopefully, and I'm not trying to sound callous or cold when I say this, it's something to be reviewed in referee situations. Learn from this. Allow the sport to become safer, become better. And I know, again, a very odd thing to say in light of someone passing away, but don't let it just be someone dying. Let it be something where you can utilize this to protect other people from the same fate.
If it's the thing I want, it's one, like I said, it's one of those things where I had to see the fight. I'd like to see the hit right before the referee calls the match, because I imagine that's what caused said injury that needed, you know, the need of the surgery.
Yeah.
And if there's a fight that wasn't normal, or like a hit that wasn't normal, or a hit that was avoidable, like, you obviously can't hit him in the back of the head. That's a rule.
Right.
And if it was just a hit that was maybe a little bit too close to that, I don't know. I don't see where there could possibly be changes. It would all just depend on how the fight went.
Yeah.
But if it's a normal fight, like we see every UFC pay-per-view, then there's really nothing you can do to change. You just hope that nothing like that happens again, and the referee just tries to be more, you know, vigilant about everything.
Yeah.
Well, and that's not, like I said, that's not placing blame on anybody. That's just trying to be more, you know, careful with everything.
Yeah. And we'll wrap up the discussion with the quote from, not mind you, this is statistics. This is the fifth fatality, in a sanctioned MMA bout since the 2007 death of Sam Vasquez in Houston. This is the statement from Nobrega team, which is his training team. It was translated from the original Portuguese. Excuse me. Nobrega team confirms the passing of its athlete Joel Carvalho, which took place last night at the Beaumont Hospital in Dublin at 9:35 p.m. It's with deep sadness that we write these words to inform you that Joao passed away after being in a critical state for 48 hours. During a TEF MMA event that took place on Saturday at the National Boxing Stadium in Dublin, where all safety rules were followed, in an bout where the referee followed all the correct and usual procedures, Joao Rafiero Carvalho felt unwell about 20 minutes after the fight. Still in the venue, he was assisted by local medical teams and then quickly transferred to the Beaumont Hospital, where he underwent a surgical cerebral intervention, after which he remained in critical state for the next 48 hours until his passing this Monday at 9:35 p.m. Despite the permanent medical assistance provided for by both the organization and the hospital, for whom we are very thankful, and despite the risks the sport involves, Joao's passing, in our professional point of view, was a huge misfortune. He leaves his family and us from Nobrega team, who have been by his side throughout his career, deeply sad. It is with a huge weight in our hearts that we present our most sincere condolences to his family and all the Nobrega team. So
it sounds like something that couldn't have been avoided.
Right. Or at least a situation that was never foreseen.
This could be something that was underlying before the fight even.
Right. And we don't have an autopsy. This is still very early on. This is at the point of this airing 1 week ago, maybe 6 days ago.
Yeah.
So not all the details are out. And, you know, we'll continue to discuss this as we go on. We enjoy MMA here on PZ85 Sports, so we'll continue with this discussion as it's warranted. But I want to end on a brighter note. And by a brighter note, I mean I want to laugh at other people's misery. Because Schadenfreude is a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is.
And here it is, folks. The Rams left St. Louis. A fact that made a lot of us sad. Or one of us very happy in the sense he didn't have to pay attention to them anymore. But here I am paying attention to them again.
Good job, Cody.
Yep, you know what? No one called me a straight shooter all the time. Sometimes it's sports. I got to cover it.
Yeah.
The Rams were participants in a trade today with the Tennessee Titans. For the 2016 NFL Draft, the Rams have received the number one overall pick, the number 113, and the number 177 pick from the Tennessee Titans. In return, the Tennessee Titans receive, in this year's draft, pick number 15 overall, picks 43 and 45 overall, pick 76 overall. In 2017, the Rams' first-round pick and the Rams' third-round pick. So a first, 2 seconds, and a fourth, I believe. Plus next year's first and third.
You're giving up your first overall round pick.
The Rams get the Titans' number one pick.
For?
The 15th, 43rd, 45th, 76th. And plus a first round pick and a third round pick next year.
That's not guaranteed to be a first round. Oh, wow. First overall pick. That's not guaranteed.
No.
Next year.
Right. It's a first round pick. And if the Rams continue on, it's going to be top 15.
Somebody's got somebody on the inside.
Are you really? Here's what this is from my point of view. This is the Rams not learning a lesson they taught someone else 4 years ago.
Yeah.
They did this to the Washington team in 2012. Gave them the number two pick, got six picks in return that they screwed up anyway, but they made a big deal out of it. To the point where they sent out the players they drafted to shake hands in the captain coin toss. And they made the mistake for someone else. Hooray sports and hooray learning from patterns. You heard it here first on Podzilla 1985. Jeff Fisher and Les Snead are not humans. Humans pick up these patterns.
Yeah.
They're not.
Well, you can't, even if it just happened, you can't call one time a pattern. This time it may work out for them. I hope it doesn't. I hope they flounder. I hope they are the bottom of the barrel for the whole time they're out there.
Well, here's where it's continuing on. Reports, insiders, Adam Schefter, Mel Kiper Jr., Peter King, a lot of these people who write about the NFL. It is believed that the Rams are taking Carson Wentz with this pick. The quarterback from North Dakota State, who has only had 2 years of starting experience and who missed some of that time with a wrist injury, who is generally unproven. Or Jared Goff, the kid that played at Cal.
Let him.
That's where it is. The Titans learned the lesson from Washington, but not in the sense of don't trade away all those picks. To say, yes, give me your picks. I will take them off your hands. Yeah. Mind you, quantity doesn't always mean quality. But the Titans didn't need Tunzel at number one, the left tackle. They weren't willing, I don't think they were willing, and I agree with them, to take Jalen Ramsey, the defensive back, at number one. If either one of those guys becomes a Hall of Famer, then you can maybe second guess this.
Yeah.
Or if Carson Wentz becomes a Hall of Famer. Otherwise, I think the Titans did pretty well for themselves in this situation. The team that rebuilding, it has their left tackle in Taylor Lewin, it has their quarterback of the future in Marcus Mariota, it now has this running back of the future in DeMarco Murray.
I guess the Titans would be as good a team to root for as any.
I'm a Texans fan, which means the rest of the division is improving. And we have Brock Osweiler and Lamar Miller.
Well, Brock Osweiler.
I'm going to start the podcast the same way I was going to, I'm going to end it the same way I started it. Crying deeply in a corner somewhere, guys.
Aww.
Sports are fun. I hate myself.
I'm trying to figure out how people pick their favorite teams in each sport. Like, I understand that why I'm a Cardinal fan. It goes in, like, my family history and in my hometown history. It's all there. That's the reason I'm a Cardinal fan.
Right.
I was a Bulls fan just by proxy, I guess, because I live in Illinois.
Yeah.
Rams, because they were close. I don't get it. But, like, my wife is a Yankees fan. Why, I don't know.
Yeah. There are three big things, and this is where we're going to wrap up this week's Podzilla 1985 Sports. Three things I've always attributed to finding fandom. One of them is the reason I follow the Premier League team I do. The other two, just how it works. Geography, family teams, uniforms. Iconography and uniforms.
Yeah, I think that's why she's a Yankees fan.
That could be. Pinstripes are classic. Pinstripes are clean.
Yeah.
I'm a West Ham fan, partially because that was my British RA, my freshman year of college. Stephen Wentz told me. He's like, that's how I determine. That's how a lot of kids determine their fandom in football. You find the team whose kit you like. I liked West Ham's kit. I like the nickname the Hammers. And Bubbles is a beautiful song. It is. It works, man.
Yeah.
Football is a mysterious sport, my friend.
Yes. Yes, it is.
But that's the discussion I would like to carry on at some point in the future, is our discussion about why you become a fan of things.
Yeah, that would be a good discussion.
It's going to be fun. But we are at 50 minutes almost, and because of time crunches for all of us involved, that's going to wrap up Podzilla 1985 Sports for this week. Tanner Calvert, thank you for joining us. Tanner, actually, I'll let you announce it if you so wish about your what's coming up for you.
So I am taking an extended leave of absence. I've had some family, I don't want to say family emergencies, but medical issues in my family pop up, and I'm going to be gone taking care of those.
Yeah.
Given the issues, I won't go into full detail. I want to spend more time with said family member, and fans, if you have family members you don't get along with, forgive them, go be with them. I know this is a sports podcast, I'm getting real sappy here, but you, just like with the MMA fighter that passed away after his fight, you don't know how long those people are here on this earth, and to hold a grudge or not get along with them, and then something happens, that'd be the worst mistake you can ever make. And I'm seeing that happen now, and luckily some people are making amends for it, and yeah.
Can't argue that. I've been in the same boat. So we, prayers and thoughts or whatever things people believe in, we send them your way for the family member in that whole situation. We're going to miss you while you're gone, but Tanner will be back at some point.
Yeah. And we're praying for a miracle here, but I will be back some point in time.
There you go. So that's where we stand currently. Tanner, as always, glad to have you around. Hope to have you back soon with everything.
I appreciate it.
This is Cody Sandusky saying thank you for listening. You got thoughts, you got questions, find our Twitter handles on the website, podzilla1985.com. Go to redbubble.com, search podzilla1985 to find the amazing gear and stuff and things you can buy via Lindsay Wolfgang, our artiste extraordinaire. You can go find us on Facebook at podzilla1985. Go find us, patreon.com. Find podzilla1985. Support us, back us, and help us make cool stuff that you like to listen to. Until the next time, Podzilla in the 1895 Sports says we are going to step out stage left and go to the softball fields, because what better way to end a sports podcast than going to play sports? Have a good week. Enjoy your sports, folks, and we'll be back next time for more. See ya!